3 days later. C+47. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Cities around the globe ground to a halt for a refreshingly positive reason in the 72 hours after what was already being called Contact Day, with impromptu celebrations reveling in the fact that the world wasn't going to be destroyed by an enormous comet, often turning into multi-night street parties. There was no more looting, and familiar analysts returned to the airwaves to discuss the immediate economic boom caused by the return of long-term thinking. The shock of the comet's initial discovery had led to untold and unprecedented economic issues from which it would take years of concerted effort to fully recover. But day-to-day consumer decisions had already returned to something close to normal. "Expect a spike in births right around 9 months from now," one analyst said, moving on to other societal upshots. "And expect Daniel to make a strong comeback in the annual baby name rankings." Emma was still under observation at the hospital, despite her repeated insistence that she was fit to go home. Dan had visited her again on each of the last 3 days, and had stopped by at Timo's hospital on one of those occasions for a second visit. Timo was looking at a long stay, his doctors confirmed. One measured in months rather than weeks, for sure. His spirits remained high, however, and he called Dan every few hours to discuss all kinds of things that cropped up in his restless mind. Trey Myers also called Dan, telling him there were no hard feelings about the hoax, and going so far as to say that he was glad Dan had kept him out of it. Dan cared about Trey's feelings regarding the hoax more than anyone else's other than Henry's. Trey had been extremely close to the group, the rest of whom all knew the whole story. So this call came as a great source of relief. The other individual who called Dan was Il Diavolo's true discoverer, Alessandro Bonucci, a friend who Dan wished he saw more of. Alessandro was the only person to directly thank him for what he had done. This meant a lot, and Dan once again expressed his gratitude for the role Alessandro had played in discovering the comet so quickly and also in keeping it quiet for the greater good while potential solutions were sought. Dan also expressed his hope of visiting the Cavalieri Observatory again sometime soon, and was delighted to hear that Alessandro would be coming in the opposite direction to oversee some redevelopment work at the new Fiori Frontieri headquarters in Colorado Springs, while Timo was unfortunately unable to do so himself. Luisa Conti and Francesco Abate, Alessandro's colleagues who had taken credit for the discovery with his enthusiastic blessing, didn't call Dan, but did issue a joint statement to convey their delight that the comet no longer posed a direct threat to Earth. Both thanked the media for respecting their privacy and stated their desire to return to something approaching professional normality as soon as possible. The world at large was almost wholly supportive of Dan, to the extent that his main concern was no longer of being resented, but rather of being held up by some as the messianic savior of humanity. The iconic image of Dan standing alone at the drive-in, sporting a Now 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 t-shirt as he stared down the messengers among a parted sea of humanity, was certainly one which lent itself well to such narratives. As, of course, did the bottom-line fact that Dan had, quite literally, acted as a conduit for beings from another world who ultimately acted to save Earth at his personal urging. Clark told Dan that this kind of stuff would die down, and Dan could only hope he was right. The only other person whose view Dan really cared about in a personal sense was Billy Kendrick. Although Billy hadn't called and Dan didn't want to reach out until things at home returned to something closer to normal, the tone of Billy's comments on his live podcast recordings left little doubt that he, like most, bore no resentment towards Dan. During one call-in segment, Billy directly defended Dan against a caller who argued that he didn't deserve any accolades and that the messengers didn't deserve any thanks, given that they had taken out DS1 in the first place. "First of all, Dan's not asking for any accolades," Billy said. "And yeah, fine, maybe it is reasonable to say that we might have had a small chance to deflect Conte Abate ourselves if the messengers hadn't destroyed DS1 last year. But let's not forget that there wouldn't have even been a DS1 if Dan hadn't done the right thing when he found that folder and leaked those files to the public. Tell me, caller, would you have taken that risk?"
Well, exactly, Billy said. "It's easier said than done, and you can't even say you would have done it." Billy also talked extensively of how, in his view, humanity had been positively humbled once and for all by the remarkable events of Contact Day. He expressed hope that the Messenger's planet-saving intervention would prove a watershed moment to usher in a more rational era, making the case in his typically passionate manner. "They could have flattened us at any moment, and they could have saved us at any moment," he went on. "And if that's not humbling, I don't know what is. An important point I want to make to qualify this is that the past few weeks have also shown us that nihilism can be just as bad and just as dangerous as hubris. To that end, I'd encourage every self-loathing human being out there to bear in mind that an advanced race just deemed us worthy of salvation. We shouldn't need that kind of external validation, but for those of us who do, well, there it is." Dan agreed with everything Billy said, but the part he cared about most was definitely Billy's repeatedly expressed understanding of why Dan had felt the need to keep the reality of Richard Walker's hoax in the shadows. And on the subject of Richard Walker, one of the main media stories of the last few days had revolved around Joe Crabb's discovery of his body during a worried visit to his isolated and undisclosed home. For reasons Dan only partially understood, Crabb, the executor of Walker's will, exercised great discretion in announcing the funeral arrangements without publicly revealing where the controversial man had been living. The coroners knew, of course, but given that discretion was a central part of their job, there was no chance of the location being leaked to the press. Henry McCarthy caught Dan off guard with a passing comment that Stevenson Farm was up for sale. Crabb wasted no time on that front either, and even suggested that it might make a nice place for him and Emma. Dan, deciding there was nothing for anyone to gain from his sharing of Walker's prior address, kept the straightest face he could while answering that they weren't looking for anywhere right now. The funeral was set for Monday of the next week, and Dan McCarthy had been quite firmly encouraged to attend. This encouragement came from an office no lower than that of President Slater, who deemed it an excellent opportunity to draw a decisive line under the unfortunate business of the IDA hoax. Dan agreed to make an appearance, but he wasn't exactly counting down the days with glee.